The Wharf, some memories of my first visit in 1986. The cold wind outside the brick building with the blue steel door. A bike parked behind the door. A bare gym hall with a mixing desk off to one side. We're listening to some surprising tracks that will form the backbone of the album Hank, followed the next day by an interview and an Indonesian rice tafel. In 1996, friends and family gather for a panoramic photograph for the best of album Nest. With every visit, there seems to be more material inside. Drums and wires, keyboards, guitars, a banjo, a beat-up harmonium, flight cases, lamps, ladders, and stage decors. A jungle, chaotic and creative. On Monday, the 16th of May, 2022, a fire destroys this room called The Verf.
As soon as it started burning, we both came to the conclusion, okay, that was it, let's move on. And we both lost precious things, and we've also been collecting like the rest of the band. But we never wanted to go back there to see if there was anything left or to be found amongst the debris. Or I never wanted to go back there.
That's the same for me. That's so somewhere it even was a relief.
I always
felt it that after this I have to clean it there. I have to. All those tapes, all those. Yeah, it's a pity it's gone.
It's like a whole band. We're all sort of hoarders. Keep on bringing things in and never throwing anything away. I had big collections of old theater lamps and slide projectors, which I was going to use maybe. And yeah, okay.
So that's it's like that.
You just have to move on. I remember us being there with the six of us looking at this building burning down, and everybody knew, okay, we go on, we will move on.
And
whatever precious thing was left there, I don't know. I didn't want to put my energy into that anymore.
Brothers Paul and Tom Tellman, sound and lighting engineers of the Nits, about the burning of the Verf. How do you move on after such an event? The Nits find their own solution in writing songs about the tragedy. Six of these ended up on a mini album called Treehouse Fire. They mark the return to a conventional way of working.
The process was less improvised. I had already these ideas on the iPad and the idea of writing and playing music about the fire was something we already had just the day of the fire. Let's do something about it. Let's not leave it like a black page. I already started very, very fast after the fire, or a month later, of course. First we played live and we did our concerts to write lyrics. And my memories about the Wharf, just writing down every day. I remember I was in Spain in January, and every morning I wrote down a little piece.
You started so early.
A little piece, just to organize my memory about it. And it went everywhere. I didn't read it back after the writing. Strangely enough, I did a lot of writing, but I used my memory of the writing and just because I did so much. And that gave me a kind of direction to what I want to. And then the process slowly became clearer. How do you want to write about a building that is not existing anymore, but instruments? And then this tree came in that was still, we did a photo session on the ground of the Wharf, and then Robert Jan said, look at this tree. And I said, oh my God, this tree is still standing there. And how is it possible that during the fire, and the tree was already standing there when we came. It was a really small tree. And now, so I thought, this tree is important. This is an observer. It could be the tree, it could be the bird in the tree, it could be So here you go. And then it lifted itself. It wrote itself, more or less.
It's part of the healing process as well, doing something like that.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a lyricist, so I did other things to get into the clear about this. So for me, it was very, very important that we had to really work very hard to make it possible to go on. So lots of practical work to find instruments again and think about how and so on. And for me, this process was very much held by the idea that we would go on. Mm-hmm. So because there was already a tour booked, and that was really a big help for me to. What Henk said, the day we were standing there together and looking at the thing burning down, that we said, well, this can never be, this should not be the end of whatever.
No. Yeah,
that was a very important moment, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you tend to fall down on the floor and just moan. But that was not what we did.
That's quite horrible.
That's horrible, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and yeah. But it's like losing a part of your of your youth or yes, it's really, if you call it, yeah. I mean, we're old men, but when we started there, we were not that old.
True.
We were still in our prime.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's important to think about it. And it's not that you don't have to think about it every day or so. Of course not. But it's there. It's there in the back of your head. And it was nice of me to write about it and to work on it.
Yeah.
But then, of course, during that year, I had the problem that I fell ill. And then the whole story turned again. Like I was confronted with maybe not be able to sing or play again. And that was, of course, a different corner, a different turn.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an even bigger threat.
Yeah. So I had to find out how to get out of it, and if that's possible. And slowly I did, and till we went back to the studio and here first, here in our rehearsal room to go through the new songs. And then the studio to record them, and that was a kind of that was wonderful to do, because I found out that I was able to sing, to sing in a certain circumstance, and that was a moment, and that was part of the, strangely enough, it was about the fire, but it was also about my fire.
Yeah, of course.
But hand in hand.
Yeah.
And. I think when you listen to the album, you even when you don't know what's going on or what went on, you can feel it probably. There's something in it, and that makes it beautiful and powerful, and that's wonderful. That's yeah.
I'm changing my leaves like you change your heart. Red in the autumn for jealousy. Falling apart. Green for the summer of our love. Black for the dying sky and the darkness above. When you came, I was a child. My innocent years, my branches like the flames grow wild. Now I'm wearing the dress of a vampire.
This is what I meant by healing process, you know, like not the fact of writing the lyrics, but more having those songs about this event that struck you. Back to more traditional ways of writing songs this time, songs.
Yeah, the songs were there.
Yeah,
yeah. I was writing it on the iPad in Spain, And so, and they were simple, and so when we started playing them here, we kept it simple.
Yep. Yep.
We did it in a modest way, almost, but beautiful. We did probably eight or nine yeah. songs. In the end, we chose six for the subject matter and for the balance in the mini album. The days after the fire, every morning I woke up with another instrument in my head, or another object that was gone.
Yes.
The confrontation with oh my God, this also this also, and I started drawing or painting those objects again, and that became, of course, the in the end the cover. It looks very simple, and it looks like you open a children's book and not a book of disaster.
Yeah.
That was important for me, because otherwise we made many photographs of the ruins. I have piles of photographs, and I had in my mind to do something with that, but I left it. That's too tough to look at.
I remember watching the fire, we also said to each other, like, you know, well, this might be a good solution to the problem we had.
Yeah, true.
With all the stuff.
All this stuff from 40 years, how to clean it up.
Well, it is true when you look at the process, and that happens every moment in the world. When people are getting older and older and older, and the stuff they assembled, yeah, is around them. In the end, when they die, most of the time it's for other people, for family, to get rid of it, yeah, to archive it, or to preserve it. How do you do that? So the fire that made this decision in some ways.
Drummer and percussionist Rob Clute keeps notes on the recording sessions.
The notes are concerned with what happens at the moment. So it could be also, in the end, I make a little description about the mood, or about maybe something Hank sang as a word, which helps me to remember what it was at the moment. Before we start playing, there are many other things I derive from my notebook. During months or years, I make notes of things that strike me, things I've read, things I've heard, and I make a note of that. And I read it, and then mostly while playing, suddenly one of those atmospheres or one of those descriptions of a feeling or an insight comes back to my mind, and think, oh yeah, that might be a nice starting point for the things I'm going to improvise. The one statement I wrote down, and I don't know exactly who said it, but because I didn't note that down, it says the imperfection of live playing is tangible. That's one thing. The other thing is a quote by somebody called Luke McKernan. He said, it's the effort that creates the understanding. Without that, there is no true sympathy, only false sentiment. Which means that you should always go for the unknown areas. Try to play something which is out of your, what they always say and call, zone of comfort. And then you come also within yourself, you come to a very true way of playing, because you're not pretending to play like, let's say, one of my heroes, Ringo Starr. No, you start playing like yourself. And that's very important. And then the imperfection of that will create, he says, you can touch it almost. In the beginning already of my career, my drumming in the Nits, I found out that I can very easily translate an image into an idea for a sound or a pattern. So that's why I'm always very interested in looking at paintings and looking at film, because the images, or dance for that matter, because these images really give me instantly an idea about, oh, this could sound like this, or this could sound like that. Quite a long time ago, I got very interested in the work of Louis Bourgeois, the painter. because I saw an exhibition of hers years and years ago in Paris. And reading about her insomnia drawings, she made a note which really connected to some things I do in my playing. Percussion playing, you could call abstract, you know, it's not like a language or a poem which creates a very clear image in your mind, but abstract drawings and abstract music leaves a lot of room in the mind, in the imagination of the listener. So I wrote down one of her statements, and she said, abstract drawings come from a deep need to achieve peace, rest and sleep. They relate to unconscious memories. I realized also before I read this from Louise Bourgeois that while playing my improvisations in a festival at Terschelling, the Oerol Festival, I noticed while I was improvising that quite a few people in the audience were really touched. And then I suddenly realized that I really didn't understand why. Until that moment, I could imagine looking at a painting or listening to a vocal or a poem. People could be touched, very touched by the meaning of what they saw or heard. But all of a sudden, I realized that what I did, the abstract music making, reached into their minds, into their feelings at a very deep level, which apparently created emotional feelings. So they connected it somewhere to maybe an experience or a memory or whatever. Apparently, the effect that what I'm doing and abstract painters also do is that you create a lot of room. If you're looking at a seascape or a landscape, then you already are given an image, you know, or a face. Maybe you know the face, or a photograph, you know the face, which sort of narrows down the possibility to imagine things. But if you stay more in the abstract environment, there's a lot of space. So it gives you the opportunity. And in that way, getting closer to your own feelings about something. Two House Fire was, in fact, more a mixture of two working modes. Hank presented us with some demos, which like we did in the old days. From that moment on, we started improvising on that and trying to find different versions of a particular idea. So before we started Treehouse Fire, I found somebody. He called himself a collector of silences, which, of course, for me, again, is a nice statement, because I always considered playing percussion of dividing the time in little pieces. If I don't do anything, time goes on. And the moment I hit something, you make a sort of a cut. And the kind of cuts you make and the tempo in which you make the cuts will decide, will influence, is it going to be a rhythm or just a mood? Being aware of the silence is important. And when we started Treehouse Fire, we were a little bit more careful because of the energy level of Hank. But at the same time, and very soon, we realized that his creativeness just peaked. So both of us, Robert John and myself, were really challenged to meet that.
I am standing in a burned out kitchen, looking at the month of May. The black pages in our agenda are still hanging on the wall today. Thank you. There are broken cups of radio and TV shows on the floor, and the painting on the wall I did in the style of Solomon.
Hank made he made a sort of effort to describe what sort of feel he liked to have in the song. And then he was talking about Everybody's Talking,
the song by Harry Nilsson from the film Midnight Cowboy.
This sort of almost light, melancholy atmosphere in the recording.
All my souvenirs are gray.
It was a real nice day when the whole thing burned down. You know, we were standing there in the sun. It was a lovely day. That's also part of my memory. We were standing there in the sunshine and the whole thing was burning down. That on itself was a strange combination. I think sort of automatically maybe I translated that in the song. It was not all darkness, you know? And also the way the band reacted to the whole thing was something like, we won't give up, you know? We will create the light. The whole light-hearted Nits feeling.
Robert-Jan Stips, a keyboard player with a wide array of sounds. He has been called a magician of sound.
When you buy an instrument nowadays, you can open the door to 2,000 sounds. And why is everybody sticking to that's a secret. I don't understand why people don't go further into their instruments.
Despite his constant work with synthesizers, Robert-Jan has a favorite instrument.
Piano is such a sort of natural thing. I mean, no synthesizer, whatever, will meet the final possibilities of one instrument. Piano is such an extension of yourself, like physically. Lots of synthesizers can come very close to it, very close to it. But then, like all electric pianos and sampled pianos, still have their own world. And a real good grand piano, or even a normal piano, has much more than that. It's much more important, like the way you play it, and then what comes out. At the other hand, if you consider a synthesizer, but when you start with a synthesizer, you have nothing. The possibilities are endless. But when you start, it's sort of empty, because you have to push the first button. So that makes it the most personal instrument ever. I mean, a violin sounds like a violin, and a piano sounds like a piano, but a synthesizer sounds like nothing. Until you, depending on what you do with it. I had quite a few samplers during the years, and I always took the most interesting sounds with me. At a certain moment, I only chose to work with Kurzweil, because I got completely crazy of all the different systems, you know, you have with PPG was very much different from Yamaha, and Yamaha was very much different from the emulator. But they all had their own nice things, so I worked many hours on it to get all these sounds in one system. So I can now still use emulator sounds on my Kurzweil. And that was sort of crazy work, but like the strings of in the Dutch mountains, you know, the big string sound. was one of the features of the PBG. I still use it in some other songs, you know, because it's very special and, as a matter of fact, not really perfect. And that was a sort of charm of it, you know, like the PBG had this very small possibility and that put a lot of creativity in it to make it sound as if it were a wonderful sound. And they were really strange. I remember from Pillow Talk. So, that was one of the sounds that came with the machine. It was possible with five of those sounds to make a sentence, and you could sing a sentence with it. But I just took out the so, and it was so weird that it passed the audition. Of course, I was experimenting then like days, and sometimes I had one sound after a day. Nowadays you can sample a whole song, but then it was a matter of half a second, and then you still had some quality that you could use, that you also could transpose it without getting too harsh. So that was working hard to get a nice sound in half a second. And for instance, it took me a day to record a train, like a half a second of a train, and which is now the of the train. And the brake, of course, it has an enormous reverb on it. But it was the first time I could push in a key and get the brake of a train. The strange thing with sounds is that you have to be very careful not to reject it. I'm always sort of open to it, like, okay, well, what can we do together? A sound has its own world. It gives you maybe a direction that you would never have thought of. But the sound appears, and I always think like it doesn't appear for nothing. I have to do it with this. And sometimes it really fits perfectly, and sometimes it's very surprising. So yeah, it's really a cooperation between sound and player. That's the nice thing about nowadays. You can suggest a whole universe of sounds, which makes it also, you have to be very aware of keeping the good taste. There are so many horrible sounds, which you can also use in a certain situation, like surprisingly, you know? Like, You can use a horrible sound and it suddenly appears to be very touching. Like somebody who's singing who cannot really sing, but who really needs to sing.
One example of unexpected sounds colliding, the attic. Solo whistling, remindful of the music of spaghetti westerns by Ennio Morricone. A bass harmonica and some metallic clanking sounds, nails and screws, used as percussion.
I remember that we were playing that song in the rehearsal room, in the new rehearsal room, and I was really searching for something to add to the song, and I was really going like Kurzweil has sometimes these combined setups with different sorts of sounds, but all together on one keyboard. I was really searching for a sound like tong tong ping pong tong 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 ping pong tong tong boi zhi 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 zhi. While they were already playing the song, and I thought, hey, this is strange what I'm really doing now. Rob and Hank didn't seem to be annoyed by it. So I thought, well, maybe I found it, you know? It's the whole combination of completely different sounds following up each other in a strange way. And I didn't know the program that well. So for me, it was also a surprise which sound came out on that note, you know. It had nothing to do with notes. It's just the place on the keyboard that gave a special sound. So, well, and doing that a few times, then I sort of got sort of more comfortable with it and how to master the whole thing. But it kept on surprising me, and that's what I told you about the sound. You know, when you hit the sound and you thought it would be a complete different sound, you have to react to what you have. Maybe repeat it a few times so you get used to it, and that the listener also gets used to it, because that's about the same situation, you know. Like, I hear it for the first time, and the listener also. So you have to deal with what you hear and react to that. What can you do with this sound? Because that's the nice thing about Kurzweil, like, every sound is sort of musical. So you can always do something with it, you know? That's how it came out. And I was really glad that Rob and Hank said, hey, we love these sounds, you know? That's the advantage of playing with Nits. I mean, I could name you a few other bands that would have gave me a cup of coffee. Sober up, Rob and John. You can play so nice. Why are you doing this? Is it dark? Is it light? Is it sunshine? Is it night? Is it happy? Is it sad? Sort of 100 things like that. They combine into a picture. It's more a sort of dream where you suddenly are, and it helps you to continue the story that a word begins. It's a start of something, and that picture helps you to make it clear where it's going.
It's a clear day, springtime coming soon.